Well, good morning and welcome to Thursday morning, Evan Bray. Great to have you here on this Thursday that is full of different topics to chat about. It seems like every day you wake up to an array of new things that have either transpired the day before, the evening before, and that is what we will be getting into during open lines at 9 o'clock. It should be fun. Jimmy Kimmel's late night talk show preempted indefinitely over a joke he made about Donald Trump. Is this federal government censorship? Is this an attack at freedom of speech or a justified silencing or corporate politics? There's a variety of angles to this story. We'll dig into that. Speaking of freedom of speech, U.S. government indicating that further to your online comments costing you, implicating you, giving you issues here in Canada, it could also affect your ability to get into the United States. And how about this? Tailgating at Mosaic Stadium. I love this idea. I'm so pumped up about this possibility. I hope you are too. We'll no doubt talk about that during open lines as well. On the show today, a guest who has studied cryptocurrency. He's an economist. He will come on the show. I will be the first to admit I don't know a lot about it. In fact, I would, at this point in my life, I've not even explored investing in it just because I'm tentative. I don't know enough about it. I know people. In fact, I've got people in my family who are all in. They think this is the way to make your investments pay dividends in the future. So we'll talk cryptocurrency and we'll take your questions. While we've got the expert in studio, your questions will be welcome. On that thought, we also have an expert in on artificial intelligence. We'll talk about what jobs are at risk thanks to AI. We'll talk about how it's changing workplaces, how it's changing education, and what chatbots are doing. We know now there's lots of stories of these chatbots stepping over the line, almost becoming harassing to who they are partnered with, in some cases, sexually suggestive. Again, an expert in studio, and again, we welcome your calls. And the importance of rail safety today, a conversation about the importance of Operation Lifesaver during Rail Safety Week this week. So that's all coming up on the show today. I am excited to have our first guest on the show. We have had Michael Zwagstra on here many times. In fact, he was supposed to be on last week, but because of some breaking news that was going on, we had to make some changes to the show program, so we're happy to have him today. Michael Zwagstra, a Manitoba public high school teacher. He's a vice principal. He's an education policy researcher and a senior fellow at the Fraser Institute. The Fraser Institute has done a couple of studies recently, one on per student funding across Canada and the other on, and we talked about this earlier this week, the recent study that shows one in three Canadian students fear facing lower grades or consequences if they express their opinions in class in post-secondary institutions. So basically saying they don't feel safe, and this, by the way, tends to be the more right-leaning students that feel this way in institutions. We're going to dig into both of these articles with our guest, Michael Zwagstra, who joins us by phone. Michael, thank you so much for taking the call.
Well, thanks very much for having me, Evan.
I've got a couple of areas I want to talk about. One of them is your recent study that shows per-student spending in Canada grew by 6% after inflation over about a 10-year period. What do you make of that?
Well, it's what we did in the studies. We just look at what total per student spending is, and then we see how it's changed in provinces. And then, of course, we break it down province to province, and there's some significant variations. It shows that in at least in five provinces, the spending is certainly going up above the rate of inflation. And then you have the five other provinces where spending has not kept up with inflation. And so it shows education is obviously a big part of the budget. It's second only to healthcare when we look at the provincial level. And, you know, it's a good reminder to us when you look at some provinces like Quebec went up way above the rate of inflation. It shows that how easy it is for the spending to continue to escalate, because one of the most common solutions in education is to spend more money, and it's not hard to do.
And is that a solution? Is there a correlation between spending more money and student achievement?
No, there is no correlation. I mean, the lowest spending province per student is Alberta, and they have been for some time. And yet, you know, for the last number of years, certainly on the PISA data, which is the Program for International Student Assessment, Alberta tends to be at the top or near the top. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that less spending leads to better achievement. It's just simply that there is no correlation. The reality is that in Canada, all provinces spend a lot of money on education. I mean, we are a first world country, and so spending is quite significant. And so when you have countries that are way below, you know, the worldwide average, then yes, of course, more spending makes a substantial difference. But when you get to a situation like in Canada, all provinces are spending a significant amount. It's just a matter of degree.
So you mentioned Alberta, and they, of course, are on the lower land end when it comes to spending, but you mentioned do well in the PISA scores. Saskatchewan, for the last few years, has not done well in those PISA test scores, and we also are fairly low on the actual spend. What do we take from that?
Well, I mean, we take from it that we have to be careful not to jump to too many conclusions. I mean, the point of the study was to put the information out there, and then people in governments can make their own determinations in terms of how to apply that. I mean, you can look at it any number of ways. I mean, Saskatchewan and Manitoba, for example, are two very comparable provinces. Our results are fairly similar, and yet Manitoba spends significantly more. It's between $1,000 and $2,000 more per student every year, and yet Manitoba's results are actually at a similar level. But obviously, you could argue this the other way, too, and go, well, you know, Saskatchewan's per spending, student per spending is below average and hasn't kept up with inflation. And that's mainly because enrollment has gone up. But there's not a lot of you can't really come to any firm, you know, direction about this is definitely what we got to do based on the study. The study is meant to provide the information, and then you have to sort of look at the data and you have to make your own determination from it.
We're chatting with Michael Zwagstra today, who is a Manitoba Public High School teacher, vice principal, but also education policy researcher and senior fellow with the Fraser Institute. I want to talk about another study that you did while I've got you this morning, Michael. And this is the one that indicates students aren't entirely comfortable in university settings expressing their full opinions. Tell me about this study. What was the reason behind this piece of work?
Well, we wanted to get some honest answers from students at Canadian universities about how comfortable they are expressing their opinion in class and whether they feel that opinions are being stifled. And so the survey was conducted by Leger, so it's a, you know, well-known polling firm, and just asking questions such as do you feel that there is what is your political orientation, first of all, left, right, or center, and then do you feel that there's a correct viewpoint in most classes, and then questions along the lines of how comfortable they are in expressing their opinion. And so the point was just to find out whether, you know, students with a particular ideological view are more likely to feel uncomfortable. And so we definitely found some interesting results.
Okay, so let's talk about what were some of the things that caught your attention, Michael?
Well, I mean, obviously, students, in terms of their political orientation, significantly more than would identify as being left of center than right of center. That was pretty skewed in one direction. But both left of center and right of center students agreed that generally in many classes, there was one correct view on controversial topics, which is a pretty clear signal that there's at least an unspoken understanding that you really shouldn't rock the boat. And we definitely found that students who were right of center felt significantly more concerned about expressing their opinions in class than students who are left of center. And so it certainly indicates that if you are more conservative, if you're more on the right of the political spectrum, you're in the minority in university and you're less comfortable speaking than students who hold a more majority viewpoint within the university context.
I feel like there's a lot of different things that we can pull from that, but what do you take from that?
Well, I take that universities, we need to do a better job of respecting diversity. And I don't mean simply diversity of appearance, because that's what most people think of when you think of diversity. We need diversity of thought, diversity of political views. It's not real diversity if everyone looks different but thinks the same. We need to have freedom of expression, and where students feel comfortable using their freedom of expression. And so we need to have a culture shift on university campuses, making it clear that that a variety of viewpoints are okay to be expressed, and because in many cases students aren't feeling comfortable doing so.
And how is that achieved? If I have Peter Stoichev from the University of Saskatchewan or Jeff Keshen from the University of Regina sitting in front of me and I'm talking to him about this study, what are steps that they can take to achieve that? Is it come down to who they're recruiting for profs?
Well, that's part of it. I mean, and just making an effort that we're not excluding professors because of their political orientation. And so, you know, that being, you know, when we're trying to achieve diversity on university campuses, if we're essentially screening for a particular ideological view because we're getting them to mark off like a checklist of, yes, I'm going to promote diversity, equity, and inclusion, and because there's a whole bunch of political angles that come along with that. And if you're not careful, you end up with a faculty that people may look different, but they all think the same. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly not healthy.
Michael Zwagstra is my guest. I have a couple more quick questions if you've got time, Michael. I wanted to talk about, in Saskatchewan, we had you on a couple of times through the teachers' labor dispute. And from that, we know that there was a settlement that came through arbitration. One of the things from that was this notion of classroom complexity teachers. And we recently saw a news release from the province. These teachers are being rolled out through the province. Do you have thoughts on that as a strategy in terms of a meaningful way to deal with this issue of classroom complexity?
Well, the approach has potential the more localized it is. I mean, I tend to be more skeptical of it when you're looking at it as sort of just this raw policy of, you know, 300 students equals this many teachers and this much extra allowance for complexity, because schools are so different from each other. But if the resources are being used wisely, and if we're targeting the classes that need it the most, then yes, having extra professional teachers in a school, in a classroom, certainly can be beneficial. The key is whether professional judgment is able to be used at the local school setting, because those are obviously the people who know the kids the most.
Mm-hmm. Michael Zwagstra is my guest. Lastly, a topic that you and I talked about last time you actually popped into studio this summer as you were driving through. We talked a bit about the Alberta book ban, although I know Premier Danielle Smith says not a book ban, but it is books that they do not want to see in school libraries. It took some twists and turns once they came out with this piece of direction to the schools. What we saw, especially from the Edmonton Public School Board, was something that I think the premier was critical of. She called it, I think she used the term aggressive compliance, or there was a term that she used on how they chose to proceed. They took a lot of books that she didn't feel would have been on the list and included them. Books like Handmaid's Tale. A lot of well-known books that have had a very important place in the classroom. Now they've made some changes. How do you see this whole issue? And was it over-the-top aggressive compliance by the Edmonton School Board to try and prove a point?
Well, the Edmonton School Board's response did seem over the top. I mean, I read the original guidelines, and I didn't for a moment think that the original guidelines were meant to cover classic literature. It didn't even occur to me. It was obvious what they were targeting. But if you go hyper-literal with interpreting, then obviously you can add a whole lot to it that wasn't there. So I think it makes sense that the Alberta government has clarified specifically what they're targeting, and it was obvious to me from the beginning. I mean, they were using specific examples in that initial press conference, and you know, it was obvious the type of material that they were targeting. It certainly was not classic literature.
This, of course, I'm sure is interesting to you as a high school teacher, as a vice principal in a school. Do you think what the Alberta government is doing is government overreach, or is this appropriate?
Well, I mean, education is it falls under provincial jurisdiction. So provinces certainly have the right to set policy and standards, and school boards are then to implement it in a reasonable way. And so when you consider that education is a provincial responsibility, of course, it's reasonable for the province to set education policy.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Okay, Michael, I appreciate you joining us. Thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you very much. You have a good day.
Michael Zwagstra, Manitoba Public High School teacher, vice principal, education policy researcher, and senior fellow with the Fraser Institute. As we were chatting, a few texts were coming in. Cal from Oxbow said, 35 years ago when I graduated from university, I knew back then that I couldn't express certain viewpoints in many classes because my grade would suffer. That's exactly what we're talking about in that chat with Michael Zwagstra. You're listening to 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.